If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
You're listening to Chief Concerns.
Hear ye, hear ye. My fellow brethren and sistren of the Chief's Clan.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Please, just like, be cool for once. Thank ye.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome in to another edition of Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810. As Curtis, as John Facenda put it so accurately, I am Joshua Briscoe. This is Chief Concerns. And as I put it so accurately, a pew, 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 pew. We got an hour of Chiefs talk for you here, an hour of, if not very serious sports talk, very serious Chiefs talk, actual Chiefs talk. And that is a commodity right now. I feel appreciated by the universe of Chiefs fans right now. The kingdom. Love me! I bring you Chiefs content! And this week, I have, honestly, a couple of just treats for you where you're going to get at least a little taste of a couple other great guys in Chiefs media who are giving us some things to talk about right now in a time that is, I don't know, it's a pretty bare pantry. We're going to hear from Seth Kizer of The Athletic, who's on with me every Tuesday over on ESPN Kansas City, almost entirely sports, from 4 to 6. This Tuesday wasn't, that's not important. But we talk to Seth every Tuesday, and he's always got great stuff. We talked to him about Justin Houston, about if there's any way that Andy Reid could end up on the hot seat, which is a silly question. We'll start there today. But you'll hear a little bit from Seth, and then also the guys from the Amateur Hour Chiefs podcast joined me over on Almost Entirely Sports earlier this week, back on Monday. And they were in studio for a whole hour. We're not going to give you all of that. I'm not going to, you know, just re-rack the podcast. But I do want to give you a little bit of that conversation. You can go find the whole thing if you're interested. But right now, that's where we're at in this cycle of Chiefs media. We lean on each other. We're a community, all of us deeply woven into each other of trying to come up with ways to talk about the Chiefs. We must stand strong together. And we got a little bit of that from Seth Kizer and from the Amateur Hour guys. We'll play a little bit of snippets of both of those in a little bit. The thing that started the conversation with Seth, and if you want to, we're not going to be able to play the whole thing back because Seth and I talked for like 35 minutes. Also, we talk about selling kidneys, and that we're not going to play you that tonight, but you can get that if you go get the Almost Entirely Sports podcast, whatever that is. You just go find it. But the thing that started that conversation was a very, very June Chiefs sports conversation, Chiefs sports talk conversation. Was, if Andy Reid doesn't do blank, should he be on the hot seat after this season? And I just want to like answer that for the record. There's nothing within the realm of the law that Andy Reid could do this year to end up on the hot seat. He could start playing rugby. He could go 0-16. He could have 15 burner accounts where he blames Clark Hunt for trading Marcus Peters. All of those things could happen, and as long as he doesn't like rob a liquor store, honestly, that might not do it. As long as he doesn't rob an orphanage, we're good. Like, I don't know if there's anything that Andy Reid could do to get onto the hot seat this year. And so that, I feel like I just wanted to go ahead and squish. 2 years from now, could it? What if they stink for 2 years in a row? Could he be on the hot seat? I mean, maybe, kind of, but he's not gonna be. It's not going to go that poorly, and he and Ned Yost will both leave the city whenever they want to. I feel like that's pretty much how it's going to go. Ned Yost won a World Series, and Andy Reid is one of the two most respected head coaches in the NFL. Top five, to be sure. So don't worry about that. You don't have to vote on every poll in June. Not all of them matter. But it popped around Twitter. I laughed at it, and I wanted to laugh at it with you. That's not going to happen. But the thing that we did on Monday, where again, you can hear the entire conversation if you go search Almost Entirely Sports. This is just a few minutes of a conversation we got to have with Ryan Scott Hall and his Dirkness of the Amateur Hour Chiefs podcast. We ended up talking about their mindset that goes into their show, how they do their podcast, and what spurned it on, everything like that. It was a great hour of conversation. But here's a few minutes of the chiefiest Chiefs talk on slot corners and Bob Sutton and things that I think you should hear, a snippet of a conversation that I had with the Amateur Hour guys.
Do you guys want to fight about David Amerson?
Yeah, sort of. I read this story a couple weeks ago that Blair Kirkhoff wrote, and he had this quote from Bob Sutton that I thought you were just going to be like, and it says, "I think we're capable there. We're going to be fine." Him talking about the cornerbacks, and I'm just like, "Oh, we're going to be fine." Thanks, Bob. It's really, really inspiring stuff from our senior citizen defensive coordinator.
"We're going to be fine" really, really hurts me. Honestly, I would take "fine" right now. Like, if you could just give me that whole unit was going to be fine, I'd be pretty happy about it, I think. I'm not nearly that optimistic at this point. I just feel like there's a disaster waiting. As much as you talk, like you said, like the offense feels a little injury-proof right now, I could not possibly feel like any unit on the planet is less injury-proof than Kendall Fuller gets hurt, and now Stephen Nelson's your number one corner, and David Amerson's your number two. The good news is they have 100,000 slot players, so that's exciting. Like, there are just 15 guys who can play the slot, and maybe none that can play outside. Go ahead. Just you guys are just pointing at each other.
I'm just pointing at him because I saw him just.
Slot corner is my favorite position out there. If I were making a defense, I'd just have 11 slot corners out there.
Are you actually the? I saw the picture in the you guys talking about you meeting Brett Veach.
Loves slot corners almost as much as I do.
I feel like the universe had a moment where like finally the magnets had pulled together, where the two people with the strongest love of slot corners on the planet finally touched. And then I was afraid that you would just birth, like, another slot Dorian corner. O'Daniel. Yeah.
Another slot corner.
Well, I actually rushed the stage, and they had security escort me out pretty quickly. It was awesome.
That's good. Okay, give me your slot corner thing. Talk about slot corners.
Well, people just...
I don't ask real questions.
People think of slot corners as your third best corner. Like, you just throw your worst corner there. When in actuality, it's the hardest corner position to play because you can't use the sideline as the boundary. So I'm always impressed by corners that can slide inside, like Chris Harris for the Broncos is not generally considered one of like the top five best corners. Like, he's respected and stuff, but I think he might be the best because he always travels into the slot. Like, and it's just a harder position to play, so I have more respect for it. And it gets such a bad rap because nickel corner and third corner and slot corner are all kind of synonymous when that isn't actually the case.
Oh, go ahead.
If Chris Harris,
so weird. There are three people here.
If Chris Harris,
Ryan's our slot corner over here.
It's well played. If he would channel his inner Casey Hayward and start like touting his own Pro Football Focus stats, then Chris Harris would know that he's probably been the top corner in the league for like three straight years.
And the slot corner, the myth of what a slot corner is, I think, is an appropriate crusade to go on because you're totally right. And what I think is really interesting about what the Chiefs just did is legitimately after, I can't remember where everyone was in each round, but I think basically from Dorian O'Daniel on, all the way until Khalil McKenzie, one of the things they said on the broadcast is, "You've seen this guy play some slot in college," and I find that funny, but also like totally reasonable because they're all so different. Like, we're going to see Dorian O'Daniel playing in the slot at some point whenever like a tight end bumps out there and you need someone who can keep up with a bigger physical guy. As much as you'll see the total opposite for, like, maybe, I don't know, Armani Watts, or whatever, these guys that can play different positions in different ways and everything. I think for me, I had a specific moment whenever I was like, oh, yeah, covering the slot is super important. It was when Eric Berry just, like, shut down Rob Gronkowski for, like, the majority of an entire NFL football game. And, like, oh, yeah, that is how good Eric Berry is and also how important that position is. So I'm with you on that. And I feel good about Kendall Fuller in general, and also especially him moving into the slot whenever they go into a nickel of some sort or any sort of sub package. That doesn't make me feel any better. And also, like, Stephen Nelson, I think the best we've seen from Stephen Nelson was while he was in the slot. I don't feel better about the outside guys.
Let me ask you this.
Do it.
So last year, and probably for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been pretty upset at the lack of movement as far as Marcus Peters was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams found it very easy to just say, okay, well, we're going to put our third receiver over mm-hmm. there, and then Marcus Peters is essentially neutralized. With the flexibility that Fuller gives you,
mm-hmm.
and what I think most people will consider a clear number one above the other corners,
mm-hmm.
do we think, like, what's the likelihood that he trails guys?
That's interesting.
Is Kendall Fuller going to move around the defense?
Well, I think it's funny because with Marcus Peters, I think even a little bit this season we've heard this at some point from Bob Sutton. I can't put my finger on it. I don't have a quote up right now, so take my word for it or don't, I guess. But we've heard them talk about, like, how nice it is for guys to be able to just, like, have their own position and then also at the same time talk about moving Justin Houston around. It's like, oh, yes, finally. I don't know if they're going to ask Kendall Fuller to just trail guys everywhere. It would make a lot of sense, and that sort of feels like the movement of the future where you have these guys that are playing, we talk about like positionless basketball a lot, where you're kind of playing a more positionless football on both sides, really, because they're going to have, offensively, 1,000 guys that can play 1,000 positions. I would be okay with that. I don't know if I can expect that because I still don't know what Bob Sutton is. Like, I still don't know what his goal is as a defensive coordinator. I would be really open to that idea. I don't know if Bob Sutton is.
Do we, like, so when Bob Sutton came here as this Rex Ryan disciple,
mm-hmm.
And I think very well respected, he had, like, coached at Army or something like that.
I don't know that to be true, but I believe that in my heart of hearts, that he absolutely coached at Army.
He was the head coach at Army, I believe.
Yeah, that's
his only head coaching job.
So, but that Rex Ryan scheme, you know, they always, it was so much about disguising your blitzes and creativity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we sure Bob Sutton's creative? Like, I feel like their defense at times, I guess maybe they've evolved over the 5 years or so that he's been the defensive coordinator, but like, I don't think they're creative at all.
I think most people would say they're sure he isn't creative.
Right. Yeah. And so that's where I think that, like, number one, that means that you look at Andy Reid and the way that he's evolved, even just in the time that he's been here.
Yes.
And Bob Sutton doesn't seem to fit with that. But I guess it's also just like I've loved what they've done personnel-wise defensively this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they have all these guys that can play all these different positions. Like you said, you know, whether it's 11 slot corners or what. It's just I think that they probably have a minimum of like 18 guys that can contribute and probably will contribute when
yeah,
you're only
you're
starting
11. Right.
They have a bunch
yeah.
of other players that are going to see the field.
Yeah, for sure.
And I love that because of that, where you don't know if Dorian O'Daniel is going to be technically a safety or technically mm-hmm. a linebacker, mm-hmm. even when he's on the field, that you can sort of disguise what you're doing.
Right.
But I don't know if I trust Bob Sutton to do anything with the kind of flexibility that he has with his personnel.
It's a really interesting conversation there. Again, that's from Monday on Almost Entirely Sports with me and the guys from the Amateur Hour Chiefs podcast, Ryan Scott Hall and his Dirkness. The question and the thought there about the Chiefs defense this year, I think, is one worth having. Because I'm really interested. I don't know. I can't say that I like it or love it yet, but I'm interested in what the Chiefs did personnel-wise defensively this year. I don't love the prices they paid to go get, you know, Breland Speaks, but at least those later picks I do really like. The Dorian O'Daniel type of finding a specific need and then filling it with a specific type of player, a guy that can do a bunch of things and that can be a more linebackery version of Daniel Sorensen while being a faster version of Kevin Pierre-Louis or whatever. Getting the best of both of those guys and the same guy like Dorian O'Daniel and doing that in a lot of different places, Armani Watts and Tre'Mon Smith and throughout this offseason, the Chiefs did a lot of that. But do we trust Bob Sutton to use those guys accurately, to use those guys to the extent of their value, and to do it creatively? And I think it's a really smart question. Because I trust Bob Sutton to cover up deficiencies, but as Ryan pointed out, since Andy Reid has been in Kansas City, we've seen Andy Reid evolve a lot. I don't feel like I've seen Bob Sutton evolve. So I'm not saying that, that Bob Sutton is dumb or bad or incompetent. But with the evidence of what I've seen from Bob Sutton in Kansas City, I haven't felt like I've seen him evolve much. And this is going to be the year where you can actually fully and accurately judge a Bob Sutton performance. And I don't think you can make any more excuses. Because this is an offseason, this was an offseason devoted to his players. Devoted to his personnel, fixing, solving problems. I'm afraid that in week 12, we're going to be going, listen, man, he's only, you know, he's got these youngins in here that don't know the system yet, don't know what they're doing yet. I don't know. We can't really judge Bob Sutton. He's got a bunch of young guys. And the first time I hear Andy Reid say that, my head's going to explode. So he can't really, listen, this isn't, we're not moving from Bob. Bob's our guy. This is his first year with a whole bunch of new players who aren't ready for the system yet. Whatever. Last year it was guys who didn't know the system who weren't good enough. And at some point, I desperately just want my defensive coordinator to fix those issues. I don't need a defensive coordinator that's going to be good whenever everything is perfect. Whenever he has super talented, super familiar veteran players that still move with a youthful exuberance, I don't need a defensive coordinator that needs all of those things to be a good defensive coordinator. Because I could be a good defensive coordinator with all those things. Like, if you give me all this talent and all this experience, yeah, I could also do it. And I also don't think I could be an NFL defensive coordinator. So I wonder about that. I do. Bob Sutton has some trust to earn back, honestly. I don't think that's unfair to ask of him. We need to see some things this year that make us feel better than, no, listen, the players just weren't good enough. I think the personnel they've used is interesting. I think solving, fixing, improving the way we talk about the slot corners, as you heard in that conversation there, I think that is a worthwhile crusade to go on. I don't feel good about David Amerson. I don't know how to feel about Steven Nelson, although I have a little optimism there. But I don't have recent evidence to feel good about David Amerson. I have limited evidence for Steven Nelson, but a little bit. It makes me a little bit optimistic. I tend to be a little bit of an optimistic person with the Chiefs, even whenever I shouldn't be. I feel pretty good about Kendall Fuller. Feel pretty good about what they're trying to do with Dorian Daniel and everybody. But man, should we be trusting Bob Sutton? I don't know. We're stuck with him. Like, that's not really a practical question to ask, but I think it's an interesting sort of thought experiment at this point. All right, we're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, I want to make sure you've heard what Tom Bahali said today, and it's going to give us an excuse to talk about Patrick Mahomes. That's always something that I'm excited to do. My name is Josh Briscoe. Beers McFly's keeping us on the air today over here on Chief Concerns on Sports Radio 810.
Chief Concerns. Pew, 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 pew.
So Tom Bahali has been doing some things lately. He said he was stepping back from the music industry a few days ago, so they ran out of budget and needed some more money to jump in on it. Which made me sad because I was enjoying the Tom Bahali Tamba Juice experience, legitimately. I was enjoying that. But now Tom Bahali, a couple days ago, like between the music announcement and now, made some reference on Instagram to like, all like back and better than ever or something, and then like I think a Chiefs Kingdom hashtag. That was confusing. Like maybe he was trying to mount a comeback. Now it sounds like he says his body is telling him that he needs to just retire. Because he's not officially retired, worth noting. And so I'm not exactly sure what Tamba is doing or planning right now, but it's, I don't know. I really like Tom Bahali. And if he wanted to come back to the Chiefs for a, you know, low veteran number, then that would be great. It seems like he doesn't have it in his knees right now. Like, I understand wanting to keep playing football, but I also understand wanting to be able to let your body heal for a little while. And nothing would either surprise me or, you know, make me feel like he was doing the right or wrong thing. But the knee situation, like he wasn't playing on artificial turf and barely practicing last year, it seemed like. So it seems like it might not be in the best interest of his health to return. But he was on Good Morning Football today. And this is, it's just a really good sound clip. Beards, you guys already play this on Sports Night tonight? You have the clip already? Beards is nodding yes. I didn't know that. We'll do it again now in case you missed it on Sports Night earlier. We might play this every segment of every show until the season starts because it's just joyful. Listen to Tom Bahali talk about Patrick Mahomes on Good Morning Football this morning.
You're going to get a complete player. I mean, he's a smart player. He could throw the ball. Athletically, he's gifted. You don't have to coach it. In practice, I've watched him just look guys off. I mean, Eric Berry, you look him off and yeah. He complete the ball. He did it to Marcus Peters a lot. And, so people don't know what's coming. I don't want to hype him, but I compare him to Brett Favre. He runs around the field and he throws the ball and he's just having fun.
I don't want to hype him, but Brett Favre! Even Tom Bahali can't help but hype him even after not wanting to overhype him. I love it! Also, like, there a couple of the words used were really good, that he's, obviously, athletically, he's gifted. But a complete player. Like, it sounds like a guy ready to go now. A smart player. Something that Andy Reid's going to really value. That's one of the things that would have held him out if he wasn't ready to run this offense. I don't think he would be running this offense this year. In Andy Reid's mind. If he wasn't ready to run the offense in Andy Reid's mind. And I think Andy Reid's probably got the highest standards for what it takes to run his offense of anybody on the planet. But did you hear what he said about what he was doing in practice? He was looking off Eric Berry. Looking off Marcus Peters often. Those are, I mean, those you could make an argument that's the best safety and the best cornerback in football. You could actually argue that. And practice isn't a game, and I get it. But if you're looking off Marcus Peters and Eric Berry, you know what you're doing as a quarterback. And I just, at every turn we see signs of this, and yet still there's a line of thinking that he's not ready for this offense and that this is going to have to be some really dumbed-down Andy Reid offense this year. Something that's just regressing for the sake of making it Mahomes usable. And I just don't see it, man. Like, there's going to be a learning curve as far as getting the whole playbook committed to memory and everything. But this will be Mahomes' second season with the playbook. If you don't think that's worth something, then he shouldn't have sat last year. He should have started last season. If you think he had to play to learn the offense, you should have just punted last year, won four games or whatever, and then, you know, this year you'd be on this, and this is Pat Mahomes after a year of learning the offense. If you believe that. I don't think Andy Reid believed that. I think that's part of the reason that he let him sit last year and now is believing that he's going to be ready to go. That's a part of all of this, man. And I don't very often see veteran defensive players dole out that kind of praise for a guy without it being earned. A ready player, a smart player, a complete player who's looking off the best defenders in football in practice. And we saw pieces of this in the Broncos game because we saw really good throws and movement and types of movement in the pocket and outside of the pocket and everything. And those are the things that we have just absolutely, you know, consumed to death. And I get it. At some point, we all fall to the beast known as June. And we just talk about the same stuff over and over again. I think it's fathomable to have a little bit of Patrick Mahomes hype fatigue. Now, also, though, there's somebody like in the comments of this Tampa video that the Good Morning Football tweeted out that said, just stop. The kids only started one game. Time to slow this hype train way down. Hashtag show me a full season first. Hashtag Deshaun Watson. Hashtag Jimmy G. And I don't know if he's, maybe he's saying that they're overhyping Watson and Garoppolo because Watson played like half a season and Garoppolo played like less than half a season. I think he played like six games. Regardless, though. Why should we slow the hype train way down? And I'm willing to take actual answers to that. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe. You can tweet at Sports Radio 810. And we'll, if you've got an idea for why that's important, then let me know. I don't see it, though. What's the worry? Is the worry that there's going to be too much hope, too much weight put atop Patrick Mahomes' shoulders? Because if you think that he is going to crumble under that weight, he never should have been drafted here. Like, he should have gone to follow to not, I mean, you can't follow a great quarterback. You can't join a team that needs a quarterback. You can't play quarterback if you're worried about the pressure crushing you. Like, you just can't really, you can't do that. I don't look at Patrick Mahomes as a guy who is having a hard time sleeping at night because he's overwhelmed by the expectations. If anything, it feels like Patrick Mahomes is probably having a hard time sleeping at night whenever he can't wait to get on the field and actually do the thing that we're talking about. So if you think that you're slowing down the hype train for the sake of like protecting Patrick Mahomes from high expectations, one, you can't, and two, I don't think he's that dude. I don't think you need to worry about overhyping him for his sake. If you're worried about overhyping him because you don't want fans, I guess, to be disappointed if he's merely a good quarterback, then I guess I see where you're coming from there, but then it's just on you. Like, if he's merely a good quarterback, if he's merely cheap rookie contract, I don't know. I mean, Alex Smith, maybe sub Alex Smith. Alex Smith's a good quarterback. He was a little too expensive for what he was producing, and we found his ceiling. And I don't think that Andy Reid was able to do all the things he wanted to do with Alex Smith. But he's a good quarterback. If Patrick Mahomes is merely Alex Smith on a rookie contract, then I don't need you to tell me to slow the hype train down now. Let me enjoy this. And if he's merely good, then we can assess him then. We're not painting ourselves into any corners here. Why worry about slowing down the hype train? Again, if you've got a call you want to make on that, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe, no E on that. A very common mistake. Or tweet at Sports Radio 810. It's probably easier, but I will definitely see it if it's at me. I'll probably see it if it's at 810. I just, the quotes everywhere points towards this guy's going to be good and he might be great. Why can't we say that out loud? What are we afraid of? Are we afraid of jinxing it? If you're legitimately afraid of jinxing it, then I partially would just say, okay, I mean, get over that. Like, that's not a thing. I don't know why we need to slide on the hype train. Let's just talk about it. Let's just be happy with what we've got. Let's be happy with the hope that we have on either side here. Maybe he's good. Maybe he's great. Maybe he's not good. If he's not good, then would it have been better off pretending that we didn't have expectations for him to be good? We expect him to be good. The Chiefs expect him to be good. They traded up to 10 overall. They used a future first-round draft pick to move up to use that pick on Mahomes. The Chiefs expect him to be good. Brett Veach said he's one of the best players he's ever seen. Everyone expects him to be good eventually. And if you're worried about, I guess, the timeline being moving too quickly, the expectations being too much too soon, I guess I don't know why. Because I hear it from Brett Veach. I hear it from Tom Bahali. I hear it from literally everyone. I'm not seeing any actual logic behind the beseeching to slow down the hype train. Cody on Sports Night, I was on Sports Night last hour with Cody Tapp, and he asked about putting a wheelie bad spin, a terrible, terrible thing that's a part of this show where we have to face terrible punishments if we get a bet wrong. What was the line that he was offering, Beards? Was it 15 and a half? I think Cody was saying he would take under 15 and a half.
I think it was just 15 was a push.
I think he put it at a half, but I don't know.
Okay.
Whatever. I think he was offering 15 and a half interceptions over under for Mahomes this year, and he wanted the under. And I think most people would take the over there if their life depended on it. If I had to give you a number, I think I would put it at 13 or 14. And I'm not willing to bet against Patrick Mahomes right now, not because it's unfathomable to me that he might not be great immediately, but because it is fathomable to me that maybe he will be. Does that make sense? Like, is that reasonable enough? I'm not saying he is fail-proof. It's not a guarantee. But I also feel equally that it's not a guarantee that he will not be good immediately. Or quickly, at least. Or soon, at least. I see the potential there. I see the reason for hope. And for just, like, for unwithheld, unlimited hopefulness. Tom Bahali, a guy who, a defensive player who did not play a regular season game with Patrick Mahomes, who just saw him in practice, who is not on the Chiefs payroll anymore, who is out here now cutting promos for him. And that's like a thing that just happens every once in a while. Every once in a while, a Chiefs vet or a former Chiefs vet's like, yeah, man, he's great. Like, or the Chiefs general manager. The hype is coming from all directions. Why slow it down? We'll switch gears completely here. Whenever we come back, we'll talk to Seth Kaiser from The Athletic. I mean, we'll give you a snippet of that conversation that I had with him yesterday about Justin Houston and the film review on him, and also why he made us all relive the forward progress play from the Titans playoff game. Seth has some splendid to do, and we'll make him do that next.
Chief Concerns. Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome back in the Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Beards McFly is here. And we're going to give you a little bit from Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. I just want to wet your whistle. I don't know where that... I guess, is that a... I mean, is wet your whistle like why you like lick your lips before you...
That would be my guess.
I can't really whistle. That's pretty good.
It was quiet.
Or maybe is that an instrument thing? Hold on. Wet your whistle. It says to have a drink. Don't click Urban Dictionary. It's probably wrong. That's probably not what you're looking for.
Sometimes they're accurate, and then sometimes they have the risky option.
Yeah. I'm just not gonna risk that one because I'm currently in Google Click and Read Out Loud on live radio mode. This says something about a ceramic cup.
Is that Urban Dictionary?
No, no, it's not. Maybe we'll figure this out by the end of our, oh, it comes from Canterbury Tales. We'll figure it out after we talk to Seth. But this is actually a snippet of a conversation we had on Tuesday, which is yesterday, on Almost Entirely Sports over on ESPN Kansas City. If you want the whole conversation, you can go find that. Just search for Almost Entirely Sports over your podcasts. We talked with Seth for like 30 minutes. We did not, in this clip, you're not going to hear the conversation that we had about what Andy Reid would have to do to get fired after this season, and also if Seth has ever Googled how to sell a kidney, because I have. And then Seth gets worried about me and also explains that we have to ask his wife before he would sell a kidney. Which, in retrospect, I understand, but it's also like, you know, I mean, sometimes you got to be able to do something on your own accord, right? That's not in this segment. What we have here is a discussion about Seth's last two projects over on The Athletic. One about Justin Houston and what he is now and how we have gone astray in our understanding of who Justin Houston is. And then also a film review over the forward progress play with the Chiefs and Tennessee Titans in the playoffs last year. I had a very honest, blunt first question for Seth regarding that film review. Seth, yes. first
back
question.
To, back to football, yes.
First question, why did you do that?
I had so many people reply to the first video clip that I did.
I was so mad.
Why? Just they were irate. So I've been doing that anatomy of a play thing. You know, I suppose here's my plug for the football stuff.
Please.
You know, every Monday I write an anatomy of a play for The Athletic, and I kind of break down a play. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, it's all been offense, and like, so it's like, it's interesting because last week I went over the Montana Magic comeback at Mile High Stadium. One of the best memories for a lot of Chiefs fans that are, you know, older than you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked, every week I asked, hey, what are some plays you want to see broken down? And for like the fourth week in a row, a bunch of people wanted to see the forward progress play broken down. So I said, fair enough, and I really wasn't looking forward to it. But you know what I found in rewatching it like 100 times?
Mm-hmm.
It now no longer has power over me.
I'm not there yet.
I actually, I don't know, if you've had a chance to read it,
mm-hmm.
if you go through it, and I address the call early on. I say, look, let's get this out of the way. That is one of the worst calls I've ever seen in sports. And that's, you know, the call that was made basically turned every quarterback fumble ever into a non-fumble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole, well, it's forward progress stuff. Yes, because he was getting killed. Right. Like, I mean, this is obvious. But once you get past that, it's a pretty cool blitz that got dialed up.
Right. No, I was with you all the way until you said once you get past that, and then you lost me. It's legitimately. I had to relive it while reading this, and it's legitimately still like I'm not. This isn't even from an emotional place. It's like the worst call I've ever seen.
Objectively, it's bad.
It's not even close to being forward progress. It's just a sack.
he just tackled the guy and he fumbled. And that's the problem is, like, you can look at the rule book, and this is what I said. I'm sure, you know, you read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could talk about the rule book and what forward progress says and doesn't say. Mm-hmm. But literally anyone that has watched football for longer than about 6 months, not even, people were befuddled. Normally, you know, when something like that happens on Twitter, you see, like, the Chiefs fan reactions.
Sure.
And you see, like, national media. And usually, you know, there's kind of a divide a little bit. This was one where, like, literally everyone was just like, that is the worst call.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, yes, they end up losing by the amount they lost by. I get it. I really do, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, it was cathartic for me really looking at that blitz because a lot of people are pretty concerned about Bob Sutton, and I understand that. Watching a nice little delayed blitz like that and some of the things that he put into place to help that play succeed, it makes you feel better. It makes you realize, you know, maybe there is some hope for the defense this next year. Because it is it's a pretty intricate little play. There's a lot of moving parts there that are used to ensure that DJ gets a free shot.
Yep.
And it works beautifully. And so once you get past the call, and again, I know that's where I lose.
Yeah, I just start hearing static. You sound like the teacher from Charlie Brown after you say that.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of want going on after that.
Really,
and I'm used to that. But that's seeing what a well-designed and executed play it was gives me some hope for the defense this year, and that, I found, was enough to help me let it go. It really was. I put in the article that I, like, stopped and took a walk and looked at the sunset. I wasn't being funny there.
I believed it
100%. That's literally what I did. I watched the play and talked about it. I was like, okay, and I backed away from my head. I'm like, I'm going to take a walk. I watched the sunset for a while, got a little clarity. Okay. It's a big universe. In 10,000 years, no one's going to care.
Right.
All right, perspective. And so then I sat down. So I decided to include that in the column because that is actually what I did.
It's what I'm gonna have to do before I go back to it. But these Anatomy of a Play things are best experienced by being able to actually watch the play and not just hear me and Seth talk about it. So go to The Athletic and read that. The breakdown there and the little bit of hope for Bob Sutton is a nice thing to take away from that play. But we're on kind of a time budget here, Seth, and we're about to run out of time. But I wanted to talk about Justin Houston. We talked about him a little bit last week, but your piece on The Athletic came out between our conversations here.
Correct.
And I loved how you started it with somewhere along the line, we all stopped universally agreeing that Justin Houston is a great player. And before we talked it last week, and if you want to hear more of this, you can go back and listen to the podcast of this show from last week when we talked to Seth about how he was used in a way that was, he was a Band-Aid instead of being a weapon. And I think that is a completely fair, apt analogy. But is there something that gave you a little more specificity either in timeline or in conversation or whatever in why and how Justin Houston became a polarizing figure to discuss?
Well, I think it's pretty simple with regards to timeline. He had the huge sack season, which is going to immediately set unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. Justin Houston will probably never have another 22 sack season again. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You know why? Because there's a lot of people that will never, ever, ever, ever have a 22 sack season.
Yep.
There's a reason why that was such a big deal. I mean, Von Miller's never had one. Khalil Mack's never had one. J.J. Watt's never had one. Aaron Donald's never had one. I mean, I could name player after player after player. They just didn't. I don't think Reggie White ever had one. Mm-hmm. And so it set expectations to a level that were never going to get met. A lot of things had to go right that year. So that's the first thing. The second thing was the mega contract. Mm-hmm. John Dorsey waited a year too long to sign Justin Houston. Mm-hmm. And now maybe Houston wasn't willing to play ball. We'll never know, right?
Right.
But that contract didn't get signed until they had to do the franchise tag thing. And that always means the longer you wait with great players, the more money you're going to pay. And we saw that with Houston. We saw that with Barry. So once he signed that deal, their expectations increased only higher. And there are some fans who automatically, when someone signs a big deal, they're not going to like that player as much.
Sure.
Because they should play for love of the game, whatever it is. And you see, here's the other thing that John Dorsey did. He backloaded the contract.
Mm-hmm.
That contract really should only be about $16.5 million a year. That's still a lot of money, right?
Sure.
But it's not $20, $21
million. Yep.
And that's what we're currently paying out because the first year was only $5 million and the second year was $13 million. And so that was the second thing. And then, worst thing that could have happened, he was on his way to having a really good year in 2015. He was on pace for probably like 12, 13, 14 sacks, really playing well as usual. Then he got hurt.
Yep.
Then he tried to come back in the playoffs, and he got hurt again. And the timing of it caused him to be hurt. And that, out of sight, out of mind. And then when he came back and got put in kind of a rough situation with a much less talented defense, people were waiting to jump on him because of the contract and being out of sight, out of mind with an injury. Does that make sense, that whole
Absolutely.
Timeline there?
Yes, 100%.
And so now what they missed, and this is what I wrote about, here's the big number that would be my takeaway. Now, I'm not talking about just coverage snaps. When you include snaps where Houston, seeing the ball, maybe was about to come back out or playing a numbers game and dropping into passing lanes or playing contain, a more passive role, right? Not rushing the passer. That was on a little over 30% of the pass rushing downs. 30%. That's a big number. A really, really, really big number. And that's going to affect how often people see you get into the quarterback. It's going to affect your numbers. It's going to affect all kinds of things. I think if Houston had just two or three more sacks last season, I don't think we hear nearly as much from people.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he hits double digits, because, people, we're weird with numbers, right?
Yep.
Double digits are a big deal. Even if he'd hit double digits, I don't think you'd have heard as much from people. But because he didn't quite hit double digits, and had he been allowed to rush the passer at the rate that he should have, in my opinion, having a more aggressive, active role in the pass rush, he would have easily hit those numbers. Because his win-loss percentages, once you factor out all the neutral snaps, if you're following me here,
mm-hmm.
once you factor out all the neutral snaps that occurred because he was dropping into coverage mm-hmm. or playing contain or whatever passive role, his win percentage was pretty was what it's always been.
Yep.
He still wins at a really high rate, and he hardly ever loses. Like, his loss rate just keeps going down and down. His loss rate is absurdly low. That was also helped, to be fair, by the neutral snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So he really, I kind of expected him, because I do think in the middle of the year, I think he was a little dinged up or something, because he didn't use speed rush there for probably 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And he stuck with more power moves. But he really looked great on film. He is a player with literally no weaknesses. He's a machine. He is the best. His run defense, and I think I wrote this in the article, his run defense, he is better at run defense than I think any other defender is at anything else.
Mm-hmm.
He's a black hole.
Yes, unstoppable.
And he's still a great pass rusher, too. He just wasn't doing it as often. Yep. So that's the summary of it. That's actually one of my two or three favorite things I've written for The Athletic, because it's an opportunity to really shoot down some narratives that I think are very false.
All right, I need, for those of us attending the Church of Seth, or whatever it is that you preach from your athletic pulpit, we are just going to take as the inspired word of God, in a 15 second snippet, what is Justin Houston right now? Where does he belong in the pantheon of active NFL pass rushers? What is he now? What should we expect from him now?
Let's say, so if you took all interior and edge rushers, I would place him as, at the very least, a top 10 pass rusher.
Okay, that totally checks out. Yeah, that feels like a logical conclusion of all of your breakdowns and everything. Also, Michael Strahan, Jared Allen are the only two. Michael Strahan had 22.5. Then Jared Allen, Mark Gastineau, and Justin Houston are the only three others to have 22 sacks in a single season.
Correct.
It's just an unrealistic expectation
to foist on someone.
For sure. J.J. Watt did have the two seasons over 3 years with 20.5, two out of three seasons. That's a pretty good stretch for him. But
absolutely. But it just goes to show how unusual that 2014 was.
Yes.
And the great thing about this, if people really want to really examine what numbers mean, is you can just look at what happened to Von Miller last year.
Mm-hmm.
He had, I think, half a sack more than Houston. And that was with an extra game.
Right.
If that doesn't tell you, and I don't hear anyone, Von Miller's really lost it.
Yep.
No, the defense wasn't as good.
Yeah.
And you know, they pay a price for that. Pass rusher is a lot like wide receiver when you think about sacks, because you're really reliant on some other things that are outside your control going right. You know, the quarterback, if he releases it in under 2 seconds, you're not going to get there anyway.
Right.
So you're relying on the secondary. And I made sure to include some video clips of Houston beating Lane Johnson, who, if you really want to see the difference between Houston and like an average pass rusher, mm-hmm. like Dee Ford, watch the Eagles game, because the Eagles, I mean, Johnson and Peters, you and I have talked about this before, they mm-hmm. really put it to Dee Ford. It was bad.
Bad. Bad.
Whereas Houston, he gave as good as he got, and he beat them more than a few times. But there was one snap where he just put Johnson on skates and was about to move inside to hit Wentz, but the ball came out in literally less than a second. That's why you have to watch the film.
That's our conversation with Seth Kaiser from The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports back yesterday. Man, these weekdays are just so difficult to get down. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I believe. It's really a struggle for me. So thanks to Seth again for making all the time on Tuesday. Thanks to the Amateur Hour guys for making the time back on Monday. If you want to hear the full conversations with either of those two guys, two guys from Amateur Hour and then Seth, you can go grab the Almost Entirely Sports podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we talked for an hour with Amateur Hour and almost an hour with Seth. Both really good conversations. If you're looking for a little bit more to add to your Chiefs fix this dark, dark time that we live in, being June. But I've always enjoyed Chief Concerns. I hope you do too. So thank you, Beards McFly, for being here tonight. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next week here on Chief Concerns on Sports Radio 810.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.